irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Back to LA Talk Radio's very own The Writer's Block, and welcome everybody to 2022. I did not think we were going to make it. I did not honestly think we would make it, but yet here we are. And this is, of course, The Writer's Block again. My name is Jim Christina, your host, and we have here in the studio with us Bobby Jane Bell from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Hello.
I'm here.
I'm here.
We had to wake you up just then, but you're here. And Richard Polinelli, my very friend.
Snow, still snowy through to Colorado as well. Yeah, we're having fun with the snow this year.
Oh, I'm sure. Did you ever get a snowblower, Rich?
I probably should, but you know, I got lucky in that the sun came out quick enough and melted up the driveway enough I didn't have to run out and do it again. So
we got very fortunate here. We have a neighbor two houses down that takes it upon himself to do all the sidewalks and the driveways.
Well, send him over. I've got a driveway for him.
Yeah, okay, I'll do that. Sure. unfortunately, we're not able to get a hold of our very first monthly guest, Mr. Henry Park, but hopefully he'll be joining us a little bit later. But did y'all have a good New Year? I had a very low and slow one. It was just, I mean, it was so relaxed, except for the kabooms and the fireworks and the, I have a scaredy dog golden retriever, and she just sits there and shakes like a leaf. So, but how are things in Albuquerque? Loud?
We had a little bit of that in the neighborhood, but really not much. It was very nice. It kind of came and went. And sort of 2022 just doesn't feel like we're here somehow. It just feels like a continuation of 2020.
Yeah, I hear you.
No. We had 19 degrees and heavy snow, so nobody was out doing anything.
Yeah.
Oh, see, we did during the day, but it kind of cleared up and the idiots came out.
No, they were huddled in their homes trying to stay warm on New Year's Eve. So
you know, nice. They're trying to do M80s and snowbanks when all you hear is whoom.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into our guest tonight because she's a terrific gal. She's a returning guest from October of last year. She's a retired FBI agent, wrote a book called It's Not About the Gun. Great read. We discussed her book last month, and we didn't really get into the parts of what we normally do on The Writer's Block, so we invited her back. This is time to talk about her writing skills, her process, how she navigates around certain things. And please welcome back to The Writer's Block for number two, her second round in the box. Please welcome Kathy Stearman. Kathy, welcome back.
Thank you so much. Hey, Jim. Hey, Bobby. Hey, Richard. It's so great to be here again. And speaking of snow, we never get snow here in Louisville, but today we actually got 3 inches. I'm sure it'll be melted by tomorrow, but
wow,
it's pretty.
You.
Yeah, I know. Woo-hoo-hoo. Hey.
And you were telling us something about Portugal, and that you were there on vacation. And that they were 97% vaccinated and had taken care of it?
That's true. They were 97% vaccinated, and that included children. And it just felt so normal to be there. I mean, like I was saying, when people would go into like small shops and things, they would put their masks on. But for the most part, that was really the only way that you could tell that COVID had ever happened. It was amazing. And the weather was beautiful. The wine was great. The octopus was tender and tasty. And hey,
there's the reason right there, you know.
Exactly. You got a little hint
with wine, everything seems normal.
Exactly. Plus, it's
well, the
cheap.
Last time you were here, we picked your brain about your book and about your trials and tribulations and travels as an FBI agent overseas. And tonight we want to kind of get into your process, your writing process. What made you start writing your book? And let's start there. I mean, a brief, if you wouldn't mind, give a brief synopsis of the book and then go into what made you sit down and start the
volume. Okay. Well, the book itself, I actually started out just thinking I would write a series of stories because when I worked overseas, I mean, crazy things happen, you know, especially if you're the only woman in the room and you're in exotic locations. And so I would just tell these really funny stories to my colleagues and people started saying, you know, you really should write these down. And so I would make little notes to myself, you know, hey, don't forget this story. Don't forget that. Don't forget that this happened. And I thought, well, maybe I'll just write a book and it'll be like a series of essays or chapters. And then when I came back to the United States, and I would give presentations, people started to ask me, well, who are you? And why did you become an FBI agent in the first place? And where are you from? And I realized that people were interested in who I was and why, as a woman, I wanted to be an FBI agent. So then that sort of changed the way that I wrote the book. And I ended up talking a little bit about where I grew up and my childhood and like, actually what propelled me into the FBI. So the majority of the book, though, is still about my time working overseas as the FBI legal attaché, which is the head of an FBI office. And a lot of the stories are funny, I hope. Some of them might, you know, piss you off a little bit. They certainly piss me off a little bit. But it's also just about being a woman working in a man's world. And mm-hmm. I've gotten a lot of great feedback on it, especially from young women and women who may have wanted to be in the FBI or an organization like it, but really didn't have the opportunity or thought that they couldn't do it. So of the hundreds of emails I've gotten, I would say 95% of them have been from women who want to be at the point and are sending me, you know, their regrets that they didn't do it and the fact that they actually get to read about it now.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, it is a compelling book, and it's fun to read. And it's a very because there's some very funny stuff in there, hallway closets, and and you had a firearms instructor that just treated you badly.
Yes.
And we all decided back then that we wanted everybody wanted to get together and kick his butt, but.
Well, he's still alive, so.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, to a degree, I suppose. Bobby, you got something?
Oh, no.
You can wake up. Well,
then. I guess if I had a question, it might be what kinds of responses have you gotten from coworkers or, you know, people that shared some of these same experiences with you?
Question.
You know, my colleagues and former colleagues, the majority of people who have reached out to me with positive words are the men. The women, on the other hand, are staying silent.
Mm-hmm.
And I did reach out to a couple of my female friends, and I'm like, why are women not speaking up? Why are they not? I mean, if they don't like the book, just say so. But I'm not getting anything positive or negative. And, you know, I discussed it with them, and they said, you know, I think that when women go through the FBI and for the most part, you're going to have a tough time one way or another at some point or another. And I think that they just want to leave it behind. They just don't want to talk about it. They just want to like sort of shove it under the rug. And so from my former colleagues, I haven't gotten a whole lot. But from the men, it's been very positive, very, very positive. Of course, they may just reach out to me because they want to seem like, well, I was one of the good guys. I wasn't one of the So I'll take that with a grain of salt, but yeah, for the most part, of all the emails that I've gotten, it's been from women, young women who are not part of the FBI, but want to be. But I've also gotten feedback from women who were maybe in the DEA or other federal agencies. And they're like, oh my gosh, you have written my story. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. So that's been great.
Well, one would think that being a woman in federal employee, especially in an agency such as law enforcement, it's pretty much the same story across the board, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Although I will say that, you know, the FBI being the FBI, the FBI does have the reputation of being, you know, the elite law enforcement organization in the world. And most people do try to live up to that reputation through their egos. Then, yeah, I would say it's probably maybe a little bit worse than the FBI. I think the egos are much bigger in the Bureau than, say, other organizations, other agencies.
So what you get is higher quality harassment.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely a higher quality of harassment. That's a good way of putting it. Hey, at least I experienced higher quality harassment rather than, you know, more low-level harassment.
Well, yeah. Yeah, at least you're going to get harassed. Might as well be good stuff.
Exactly.
The question that we actually asked you the other night, and I told you I was going to ask you this, is that as you're making your notes and everything to write your book, how did you navigate through all your notes, making them into a cohesive format? I mean, I know you had to make all the stories fit. Some stories didn't make it into the book, I'm positive. How do you disseminate which ones you're going to go in and which ones you're going to put by the wayside, and maybe they'll go, maybe they won't?
I actually wrote about 110,000 words originally. Mm-hmm. The book as it is now is about 80,000 words. So I cut probably a good third of the book. And what I did was I wrote all the stories that I wanted to tell. I just wrote them as if they were like separate chapters. Mm-hmm. And then I went through them and I actually used the Scrivener software, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
And you can sort of put like every single chapter up on what they call like a blackboard. And then you can sort of move them around like little, you know, chess pieces. And so I did that a lot. And then I realized, you know, once you look at certain stories, you can see almost right away that some stories just don't belong. You know, they don't really fit into the narrative that you're telling. And so I would, you know, sort of put those aside, and I kept putting stories aside. And then when I had about 85,000-90,000 words, then I started looking at how I was going to put them in the book, because I wanted to do them somewhat chronologically, but I needed to have a good chapter at the very beginning that would catch everyone's attention. And then once I did that, then I picked the very last chapter, and then I took the stories and put them in the order that I wanted. And then I wrote endings and beginnings so that they could somewhat tie together. And that was actually a lot of work. I mean, I think people think that the writing itself takes time, and it does, but when I fit this together, it's sort of, you have to like sew it together.
Right.
And that was fun, and it was an interesting process. The first time I'd ever done anything like that. I had an editor who took a look at my chapters and gave me some, you know, comments on maybe you should move this one here and that one there. And we talked about that, and the book really sort of morphed into what it is now.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that Richard and I do a lot of editing, and we do a lot of proofreading. And did you allow your editor to dictate what stayed and what went, or how you wrote certain passages or how you wrote certain chapters, or did he, she, it, whatever you have, allow you just to put down what you wanted? And they primarily did grammatical punctuation edits and stuff like that.
Actually, they didn't really, my editor didn't push back on much of anything. Because she wanted my message to be what I wanted to say. There was one chapter, however, where every female who looked at my book or read my book, edited it, read any part of it, said, you need to change this. And that was the chapter when I talk about my choice to be child free, the one called Stay Out of My Uterus. And that chapter seemed to just raise the hackles of every female that read it. and they said, we need you to tone this down. You need, and I was like, absolutely not. I refuse. I will not. This is how I feel. This is my truth. This is my life. And, you know, not everybody, not a woman would be a mother. So honestly, that is the only chapter that I got pushback on.
Okay. Hang tough. We're going to be right back. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. And this, of course, is The Writer's Block. First show in 2022. And we'll be back with you just a moment right after this brief word from LA Talk Radio.
You ever listen to a radio talk show and think to yourself, I could do that, or I could do that better? Well, now's your opportunity. See, LA Talk Radio has slots available Monday through Sunday, and they're all day. We're looking for hosts to fill those slots. So if you have an idea that you think translate to a radio talk show, go to latalkradio.com, find the link that says Become a Host, click on that link, and before you know it, you will be the host of your very own talk show right here on LA Talk Radio. And you'll be joining the hundreds of hosts that have got their start in radio. Here at LA Talk, that's latalkradio.com, how to become a host. Sam Hassan will be happy to walk you through it, and you're going to be proud of what you can do as a host of your very own radio show, LA Talk Radio.
And we are back. It is now 17 minutes after 6 Pacific time. We're on the air with our FBI agent, well, retired FBI agent, and new best friend, Kathy Stearman, and, of course, Richard Polinelli and Bobby Jean Bell. And if you want to call and talk to Kathy, great conversations, I have to say. The number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And, again, that number is 323-203-0815. Richard, I noticed you took out the whiteboard.
Well, I was going to send a quick message.
It's always dangerous.
I think you guys figured out what's going on. Scott, keep throwing me out. So next week, that's all
we'll
I can say.
Yeah.
I do have a quick question for Kathy, though, because we have seen through the years the movies and the TV shows about the FBI. I mean, you've got the fictional all the way to the movie I was thinking of was Breach that had Chris Cooper in it. So I'm curious, how accurate are some of the way the agents are portrayed and the way things are done? And did you try to maybe address that in your book as far as, no, this is really how things go, you know, for an FBI agent?
You know what? People have asked me that question before, and it's always fun because I always say, there's not a single thing in those movies or TV shows that is accurate.
Okay.
and you know what? The reality is a lot of the work that you do in the FBI is slow. An investigation takes time, and it's a lot of tedious, tedious things like surveillances and looking through records and then putting it all together like a big jigsaw puzzle. And that takes time. And, you know, in a 1-hour show or a 2-hour movie, it just moves so fast. And all those shows and TVs, movies, you know, they have the best equipment. Like, oh, you have a question? Well, you just plug it into the computer and out it pops. And that's not true at all. But here's my big pet peeve when it comes to movies and TV shows. They always show the female agents. And they always have these, like, really high heels and, you know, their hair's done this way and everything's perfect and they're running down the street in a designer outfit. And it's not so. And you're digging up a body. You're not wearing white jeans and sandals. You look like you dragged your clothes out from underneath the bed that what day when you dressed, because you're going to get filthy and nasty and you're going to be on your hands and your knees. And it's not glamorous at all. So it looks great on TV and in the movies, and it is a great job. I'm not trying to say it isn't, but Yeah. You don't wear a full face makeup to a crime scene, usually.
So it's not Dana Scully in The X-Files, is what you're telling me.
You know what? I did say once in an interview that the other thing that is one of my pet peeves is you never see agents writing their reports. We write so many reports, mm-hmm. it's not even funny. There's only one FBI agent on any show or movie that I ever saw, and of course it was a woman. Dana Scully, at the end of every show, would write her report, and yay for her.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
When you mentioned before that you cut quite a few words out and you got it down from 110, whatever, would you imagine that any of what you cut could become short essays or sort of short stories that you could be using in other ways? On your website, you have, you know, there's a crime you could click, and there was a short, it was actually from your book, but we went somewhere to another website and read that. And I wondered if you have some ideas for how you might use that material.
You know, I actually have thought about that. Thank you for asking. And I send out a newsletter, and I was sending it out fairly regularly until I started working on an MFA program recently. And in the newsletter, sometimes I would write a little story, you know, just a really short one, and it would be related to what I didn't put in the book. But, you know, now that, you know, I'm sort of moving away from, you know, at least this is what my publisher has told me, after your book's been out over 6 months, you sort of move away from the more active marketing to, you know, doing other things. So I actually thought that I would use some of those stories and maybe use them as a blog on my website. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a great idea. And because there are some funny things and some really touching things that I still would like people to know about the Bureau. And one of the things that I'm actually giving a lot of thought to is the fact that my book is nonfiction. I couldn't put anything about a case or an investigation in it because my other book of fiction. Of course, I'll have to change a lot of details to make sure I don't write anything classified. But this way I can actually talk about, you know, terrorism cases or espionage cases and counterintelligence cases and things like that, from drawing from the actual experience I had on the job. So that's something that's sort of in the back of my mind, but mm-hmm. we'll see. There's so many books about the FBI out there, and I'm not sure how another one would.
You should do it. Your fans want more.
I think you ought to write one about Area 51.
You know what? I don't know if you've read this book, but a woman named Annie Jacobson wrote a book called Area 51. She's actually written several other books on, you know, government. She said, you know, she's gotten some information on things that have become, you know, non-classified. But one of them is Area 51, and it's actually pretty good. So you should read it. Annie Jacobson.
Okay. Write it down, Richard.
I've already got it. I got it. Well, that one out. Now, I just want to know how many FBI agents were on the grassy knoll in 63. That's what I want to know.
You know, speaking of that, this is kind of weird. Back when I was a new agent, you know, we get these what they call call-ins. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the people call in and they'll give you a tip, or it could become an investigation. And somebody had called in and I was on duty, and it was a tip about the JFK assassination. And it seemed really credible. And so I wish that it was so credible, I actually went and tried to look up this specific thing that I was told. And I learned that it was not going to be declassified until November of 2021.
Oh.
Which just passed.
Happened.
And I've been meaning to do some research to see what new has been uncovered in the JFK assassination. So maybe it's there. I don't know.
Could be. It could be. You know, I brought that up because I worked for a former FBI agent for about 3 years, and the case he took with him when he left, although he didn't actually work on it at the time, was D.B. Cooper. And he actually wrote a book on D.B. Cooper, and we would be in the office, and at least once a month, somebody call up with a tip on where D.B. Cooper found. And you know, he heard it at times, or a good chat type of thing. Do you have a case that, whether you worked on it or not, that you've kind of taken with you into retirement and you want to go back and revisit?
That's a great question.
Yeah, it is a great question. First of all, you never take a case out.
Oh, I know. But you kind of kind of sticks with you.
don't tell anybody that guy's name, because even probably now you still get in trouble.
No, he's dead, so we're fine. He's good. Yeah.
Talk away then.
Yeah, I can talk away.
You know what? That is actually why I'm thinking about writing a work of fiction, because there are cases that are really intriguing and have a nexus to so many, international events that I've really, really given a lot of thought to sort of fleshing those out. And, you know, obviously a lot of it would be fiction. But the basic foundation of it would be a real case or cases. So yeah, absolutely. There's things I think about every day.
Mm. Yeah, you know, Richard knows my theories on D.B. Cooper.
Oh yeah.
And that he went through the cargo access panel in the back of the 727 after he opened up the stairwell, and he threw out the parachutes. Threw out the money, whatever $20,000 that he threw out, took the rest of the money, climbed into the cargo hold, and got into a crate and shipped himself to Reno.
It'd be one way to pull it off. It would, you know.
You were going to say, I'm sorry, go ahead, Richard.
No, the reason why I brought that up was the work that we did, we had case files. It was ready to do. Couldn't find the people the money was supposed to go to type thing. And we had one file that I got assigned, the person's money, she had died during a bank robbery under an assumed name, and nobody could ever figure out what her real name was. And this was one that when I didn't have anything else to do, always went back and tried to work on a little bit. And I finally got it out of my system. I wrote it in a short story that was published where the person is dealing with that kind of a situation and at the end finds out who she really was. So I was just kind of wondering if you had a case like that was kind of sticking with you and you're going to work it out somehow by getting it out in a story if you had to, just to get it done.
Nothing really like that. Although I do have some things that I want to write about and, you know, and I can't really talk about it now because it's classified in it. So I've got to figure out a way to write about it. But there are definitely some intriguing things that I've worked on that would just really blow people's minds. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of it happened overseas. And there's always a nexus to the United States and then to other countries, which is always, you know, interesting and can be very espionage oriented. So
let's hold it right there, guys. We're going to have to take another real quick break. You are listening to the LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. And we will be right back after this brief word from Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books.
You say you've written the end on a book that makes Rowlings look like Jack and Jill went up the hill, that makes Tolkien's look like a trip to the store, and finishes a series better than George R.R. Martin? But you don't know how to get your book into the hands of readers?
No!
Well, look, before you throw that manuscript in the trash and set Warp 10 for Get Me the Hell Out of Here, go to TuscanyBayBooks.com, click on the Submissions tab, tell us all about your book, and we'll get back in touch with you and we'll help you get that thing formatted, edited, get a great book cover for it, get it out there so that people can read it, and let you know how to market it too, so that you can do the most important thing, write your next book. That's TuscanyBayBooks.com. Go there today.
We are back, and of course, Richard's whiteboard said, "Who wrote this ad?" And he did.
Yeah.
It's a sign of a sick mind and an editor and a proofreader. And we are back with our guest, Kathy Stearman, and of course, Bobby Jean Bell in Albuquerque and Richard Polinelli in Fruita, Colorado. And I am Jim Christina, your host. And if you want to call and talk to Kathy again, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And she'd be more than happy to chat with you. Because she's doing a good job of chatting with us. So, hey, it is what it is. Now, here's the question, Kathy. And you're a married lady. Mm-hmm. You've dragged your husband pretty much all over the world.
I have.
Yes. And the question that I mentioned to you the other night, and I always wanted to ask a writer this, because, and I never did. When you're writing, you're sitting down and you've got yourself locked up in your office or wherever it is that you do your writing, how do you deal with the fact that you're ignoring your spouse?
Or you know, I don't really ignore him, because he works from home. He's actually an engineer. He's a chemical engineer and a cybersecurity engineer. So I have an office on the third floor of our house, and he has an office on the second floor. And, you know, I really try to work. We try to work our schedules around each other. So like when I'm writing, you know, he's working, so that we don't really, you know, get on each other's nerves, number one. But yeah, it really isn't an issue. Now, I will be honest and say that there are some times when he's talking to me and he's talking engineer stuff and I'm thinking about writing something in my head. And so, like, you know, when a cat has that inner eyelid that just sort of comes over the eye, I'm pretty sure my eye gets like the inner eyelid as I'm writing in my head and he's talking.
Lizard eye. But,
yeah, you know, the inner eyelid. So I'm sure that happens. But other than that, we've actually worked it out pretty well. He's pretty laid back in the first place, so it's no big deal. Now, living overseas, dragging him overseas, that was a different story.
Yeah, I'm absolutely certain of that. I mean, guys don't like to be dragged anywhere.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Especially at cocktail parties and overseas assignments.
Well, that's true. There were a few of them that he got really mad about. So I'll agree with you there.
There you go. In your writing, I'm going to go ahead and ask the question, Bobby, unless you want to.
No, that's fine.
Oh, okay. This, of course, is known as the writer's block. And there's a reason that it's called the writer's block. And in your travels and travails while writing this book, it's not about the gun. Did you ever get writer's block? And if you did, how did you get through it?
You know, I never really did. I'm going to knock on wood now because I don't want to jinx myself, but I'm still trying to write. I never really did, because I always say, you know, the book was originally 110,000 words and I had to cut so many of them. And even now I find myself with things about the career that I could write about. So no, regarding the book and what I wanted to say about my career in the FBI, I never really had writer's block. Now I find myself sort of stuck a few times, but not that much, not really. Again, knocking on wood as I'm jinxing myself.
Okay.
But you know, one of the things, this is kind of weird, and I actually told this to somebody not long ago. Sometimes when I am stuck, I will read whatever I'm trying to write, what I'm trying to finish, and I will think about it right before I go to sleep. There have been times, and I'm not kidding, where I've actually written a whole piece in my sleep, and I know I'm doing it. And then I wake up and the first thing I do is I run to the computer and it all comes out like without stopping. I've done that a few times. It's kind of bizarre. Mm-hmm. So have you guys done that?
That book I sent you, Jonah Blue.
Uh-huh.
That was a dream.
Oh my God. Well then, you know, I'm
going to. That whole book was a dream and I dreamt the whole story and I woke up and it didn't go away. It was still there.
It's so, that is just, it's the most amazing feeling.
I know, isn't it?
Yeah. It's incredible.
It truly is. It truly is. Richard, I know you've remembered dreams and written them down.
Oh, well, Escaping Infinity basically was the product of about a week-long series of dreams. And after the seventh night of it, it was like, wait a minute. This is the book I've been trying to get sorted out. Let's go write this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's probably your subconscious going, okay, stupid. If you're not going to figure it out on your own, I'm going to give you a kick in the butt. We'll get it done.
Exactly.
I like that. Yeah, exactly. I was going to have like a more of a spiritual approach to that. Like, oh, your mind is opening up to the universe. But instead it's like,
I'm a guy.
Somebody's the cocktail party thing.
Yeah. We deal with boots in the butt. You know, that's just how we
deal. That's how we deal with things. So when is it that you like to write, Kathy? When do you set aside time for writing?
Well, now that I'm working on an MFA program, it's a Master's in Fine Arts in Creative Writing, and I'm focusing on creative nonfiction. And the way that this MFA program works, I have new stuff, and then I also have to read two books and write critical essays on each. And it doesn't matter what those 50 pages are. It could be like one long piece. It could be several short pieces. I just write sort of whatever comes to mind. You know, if something pisses me off during the day, I'll write about that. You know, like I'm sick of looking at people looking at their cell phones all the time. I'm working on a piece about that. Especially, you know, like when this happened recently, you're at an airport. This was in Denver. You're at an airport and you're on that little moving walkway and people can't keep their hands off their phone. And at the very end of the walkway, they stop.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't stop yourself from the walkway and you run into them and you almost knock them down because they had to stop right there and stare at their phone. Just write about, you name it, I write about it. So I don't really have a shortage of topics. I'm very opinionated, as you can tell already. So I usually put those opinions on the page.
There's nothing the matter with being opinionated. We like opinionated around here. Yeah, I'm with you on the cell phone thing. I used to go to Pittsburgh, you know, every quarter. And there's always some guy standing in the gate talking really loudly on his cell phone. And everybody's staring at him. So this one guy one day said, Jesus, God, you guys are invading my space. And we said, no, you're invading our space with your phone call. We don't want to know who you're talking to or when you're, you know, get your clothes off and do the nasty. Don't care.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I get that cell phone thing. When you set aside time for writing, do you set aside separate time to sit down and just pound? Or do you also continue to outline, pull stuff out, put stuff in? Or is it just writing time is writing time? You sit down and start typing.
I usually have about 12 essays going at any one time.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do to start my writing day is I read poetry. And I never considered myself a reader or a fan of poetry. I don't know why, but I just never have been. Until I went to the University of Iowa's Summer Writing Festival. And one of the classes, the professor started every class with a couple of poems. And I didn't realize how reading poetry sort of focuses your mind on creative language until that class. Mm-hmm. And so now, every morning, I will read at least two or three poems from, you know, a different variety of poets. And that's how I start the day. And then depending on if I have something in my head that I really need to get down on one of my essays, I'll start writing. If not, then I will start reading one of the books that I'm supposed to be reading for the class. So it really just depends on, you know, if I have one of those mornings where I've dreamed about writing something and I need to get it down, that's the first thing I'll do. You know, to heck with the poetry. I've got to get that out. But if not, I actually start with poetry.
Do you find that poetry relaxes your mind?
it relaxes my mind, but it also makes me think of things that I want to say, things I want to write about. And I've actually, this just pretty much happens every single morning. I'll put a poem down like in the middle of it because something will just pop into my head and I'm like, I've got to get it out because this poem has, it, I don't know, it's piqued something in my subconscious that I need to put on paper. So that's another kind of maybe, you know, odd quirk that I have when I write.
Okay. We have one more commercial we have to get through and we'll be back with you. So don't go away. You are listening to LA Talk Radio's very own Writer's Block, and we will be right back with you right after this brief word from Creative Edge Publicity.
Okay, you've written a book. How are you going to get your name out there? Well, the folks at Creative Edge Publicity will. That's their job. They aren't going to sell your book. They don't want to sell your book, but they will take your brand from the ground up so you are known in your genre and within the writer's community. They'll do this by using podcast and publishing to get your name and your brand recognized. So why are you waiting? Contact Creative Edge Publicity at www.creative-edge.services or email Mickey Mickelson at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com. Creative Edge, it's your work and it's your brand. Why would you trust it to anyone else? Creative Edge Publicity.
And we are back with our guest, Kathy Sturman. And, of course, Bobby Jean Bell, who's sitting over there in front of a nice wreath.
Christmas is still up here.
And, of course, Richard Polinelli. And we're running down the last few minutes of the show, Kathy. And I don't know if there's anything else that the other two jabrons are going to want to ask. Okay, Bobby Jean, go for it.
Kathy, I noticed on your website you had some really good information for book clubs. And I wondered if you'd like to share maybe a little bit from an author's perspective, how do you find book clubs? How do you get the word out to book clubs that your book would be great for a book club? And how did you come up with your great suggestions?
You know, I really people just reach out to me via the email on the website and they ask me if I would, you know, do a Zoom with a group or a book club or a women's group. And it's really organic. I don't put anything out there, but I do have it on my website in case people do want to use those notes and things for a book club meeting. And I have done some Zooms with some clubs and, you know, like I said, if they reach out to me, I'm more than happy to do it. I would love to put the word out there now, you know, through your programming. If anybody wants me to do a Zoom book club, I'm more than happy to. I love it. I love the questions. I love, hearing what you think of the book and what you didn't like about the book and what confused you. It's all great to me. So, I did put that on my social media one time, I think. But other than that, it's just on the website. But that's a good question.
Well, and it was really fun. You suggested that one thing people could do is bring, you know, to snack on what they think that you would have at a stakeout. You know, what would you be eating while you were?
So that's going to be junk food. Usually it's
Cheetos.
Yeah. I was going to say potato chips, nuts, M&Ms, usually a payday bar. I love pay bar. That when you finish the drink, the top of the drink is wide enough so if you have to take a pee in the jar while you're on surveillance, you could do that too.
Smart woman. Look at that. RFBI at work.
Oh my gosh. I haven't seen that. You know, the FBI TV shows.
The hitman's bodyguard. It's in the hitman's bodyguard. He has a bottle. It's a wide mouth bottle he uses to do that. And Samuel Jackson picks it up and looks at it and goes, dude, really?
Reminds me of my trip across the country when I was 7 years old and my mother in the mayonnaise jar. Mm. God. And five kids.
I remember once I was on a surveillance with this guy, and we were pretty good friends, and we were in a van, and it was hotter than the gates of hell. And, you know, I'm looking out the window, and you know, I've got the camera, the binoculars or whatever. And I happened to look back at him, and he's taking his pants off. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? And he goes, I'm hot. I can't stand it anymore. And I'm like, okay, great. You know, well, I'm not taking my pants off, so knock yourself out.
There you go. There you go. Well, you know what? Thanks so much for joining us again on the old Writer's Block. It's been a hoot, as it was before. And, you know, we always appreciate when guests decide they want to come back, which is always a good thing. And we managed to get you in early enough to where we didn't forget about your book to start with. Of course, we never would have. Didn't I write a review for that book? I think I did.
You did. It was a wonderful review. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. I don't remember which ones I do write reviews for and which ones I kind of thought I did for yours, though, because it hit me so well. And we'll be, when you get your new book done, get back a hold of the bookie.
I will.
And we'll get you back on with us. And don't go away after the show. Just hang tough, because we usually sit around and just BS for a few minutes before.
All right.
Next week, we have Michelle Yee. She's a creative edge writer. She is also an emergency room physician, and she writes mysteries, medical mysteries. And it's going to be interesting to read what her book is, her newest book. And she's got a slew of them. And we have a book, Henry Park, who should have been on with us tonight, but somehow missed a calling. Henry. He is going to be booked. He's going to be with us on the 14th. They're going to get. Screenwriter extraordinaire. He's a writer. He's a teacher. He does it all. And he writes his roundup. He writes for national magazines, movie reviews. I mean, the guy does everything. And it'd be wonderful having Henry with us for that whole evening, as he was before, years ago. And Henry has been our opening act the first Monday of the month since 2017.
Well, I think he was with us almost from the beginning.
Well, he was before that, but we had him every other week.
Oh,
that
okay.
That was too many, and that was too much, and so we moved him to once a month. But he's been with us almost since the beginning, and we've been on the air almost 7 years, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and Henry's been just a great asset to the show, and he will continue to be if we can get him to answer his phone. Okay. So, again, next week is Michelle Yee and our guest, Kathy, and my beautiful and charming wife, that without whom, the bookie, the show would not be possible. Myself, Jim Christina, and of course, our engineer and owner, Sam Hassan. Thank you so much for joining us. Happy New Year to everyone. And we'll be back with you next week with Michelle Yee. And right now, we're out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli. Only on LA Talk Radio.